Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, June 22nd, 2010. Tech News Today is brought to you by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I am Becky Worley.
And behind the board is our scintillating producer, Eric Lanigan.
Ooh, scintillating. I like that.
You got to live up to that.
I'm working my thesaurus out. This is the show where we kick around the tech news of the day, try to help make it make a tiny bit of sense, a modicum of sense.
We try to make sense, too.
Yeah, we try to make sense. That doesn't always happen, but we make the tech news make sense.
This week, it seems like all that makes sense is Apple, Apple, Apple.
Well, it's iPhone 4 week, right? So we talked yesterday about how some people were getting emails saying, hey, your iPhone will show up June 23rd. And Sarah Lane said, ha, that's not going to happen. Apple's going to delay these. They're not going to show up the 23rd. Nobody's going to get their iPhone 4 early. I'll bake them a cookie if they get their iPhone 4 early.
She's going to be baking?
For Gil Cabrera, who is joining us on the show.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Gil.
I was watching Buzz Out Loud this morning, and I saw in the chat room that you had got your iPhone 4 already, and I retweeted you. You got in contact with me on Twitter, said, hey, I'll come on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure. Yeah, and it's actually working now. Earlier it wasn't working, but we got it activated. So
tell us a story. Like, how did this arrive this morning? I'm sure you weren't expecting it, right?
I wasn't. I got the email as well that said it was going to arrive tomorrow, so I was thinking maybe tomorrow. And then I got a call from, I'm an attorney, and I got a call from my receptionist saying that my iPhone had arrived, and I told her, no, it's coming tomorrow. It's probably something else I ordered from Apple. And she says, okay, well, then can I keep it? And I said, no. Well, let's open the box and find out what it is.
Okay, smarty pants, can I keep
it? Yeah, she opened it. It was the iPhone, and I was in my office within 5 minutes, I think, James. I was hoping I had lights and sirens to get down there faster.
But, right.
So then I got it. I was excited, ran home to activate it, and then kept getting an error message, of course.
Yeah. Now, at first you were thinking like it probably just isn't allowed to be activated right now. Because I saw the screenshot. You said something. It said something about activation failed. Try again later or something like that.
Right. Yeah. It was commenting on the date and time on my computer. So I was thinking maybe they'd not letting it be active until the 23rd or the 24th. So I manually updated my time to June 24th, and it still didn't work. Called Apple. They said the rep was kind of like, you know, curious about why I had an iPhone 4, and then said, oh, well, I think our activation servers won't be on until tomorrow, so try again tomorrow.
A little bit of a brush off there.
Sort of. Then I got a weird phone call from FedEx asking me if my package today had received my package today. And I said yes, and they said, okay, thank you, and then they hung up. And then I called Apple back after a few hours and got a supervisor, and he walked me through a few things, and then he said, have you tried rebooting your Mac? And I said, no, I wouldn't have thought to try that. And he said, yeah, try that. And so we did that, and then it worked.
Well, we all hate you a little bit, but congratulations.
He's holding a Yeti that's standing next to Bigfoot. It did arrive. It did happen. Congratulations, Gil.
Well, Becky, Thanks. You have actually had your hands on the iPhone 4 before. So now I know two people.
Yes.
Gil and you.
Yeah, we're in special company, Gil. So congratulations. Welcome to
the
club.
It's a small group. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, man. Appreciate you taking the time to chat with us.
My pleasure. Have a good day.
If you want to follow the rest of Gil's saga, look back at as it happened on Twitter. Go to twitter.com/Gil Cabrera and check it out. There's reports elsewhere on Engadget and Electronista and other places of people who have who've gotten iPhone 4. So Gil isn't the only one. It's squeaking out there.
But it will not be squeaking out from AT&T stores.
No.
On Thursday.
Absolutely not. They have announced flat out, we're not going to have any on Thursday. You're going to have to go to Apple or maybe Best Buy or Walmart, because there's some pictures now of them showing up in Walmarts today, ready to be sold on Thursday.
And I called my contacts at Walmart. They said 1,500 Walmart stores will carry the iPhone 4 on Thursdays. But they said customers should call their local stores first to find out if it'll be available at that particular location. and they're not making public how many will be available at each store. Now, AT&T says they will not have iPhones in their stores until June 29th. But the Apple store...
Wait, that's like next week.
Right, next Tuesday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a long time.
Yeah, well...
AT&T
is having a rough one.
They are having a hard time. First of all, you can't keep this phone from leaking out early. It's showing up in bars and places in Vietnam and now at Gil's house,
right.
You know. And then the people who did want to wait and get it on Thursday are getting all these cancellation emails saying, oh, yeah, we're not, you aren't going to be able to get it. And then folks are like, you know what, I'll just go to the AT&T store. They can't get it till Tuesday.
iPhone apocalypse is keeping us in business.
Yeah, no kidding, actually. It's job security for us. It's just, you know, it's a mess.
But for people who have negged the iPhone and favored the Android phones, something new for them today, right?
Yeah,
the Flash.
You're talking about the Flash, the Adobe Flash?
I'm talking about the Flash, Tom.
Yes, because is that out of order? Is that why I'm so flustered?
Or sorry. I was trying to help you with the segue. See, this is us learning to dance together.
You segued down like three stories.
Oh, I'm sorry. I am sorry. You know what?
But let's talk about it. Adobe Flash gets its full launch on Android today.
I was trying to help.
No, it's good. Before this, all you could get was Flash Lite. And Flash Lite didn't run on every operating system. It wasn't always installed on every show or every phone. So now Adobe Flash launched. If you have Froyo, Android 2.2.
I love that some people call it Froyo and some people call it Froyo.
It should be Froyo because all of these are named after desserts.
Right.
Like the cookies that Sarah Lane will have to buy everyone.
Baking for the Gill
exactly.
And people of that nature. Right. So this is a big deal.
It's funny that you said baking and I said buying.
I am domestic goddess, you are man. But this is a big deal because obviously the Flash debacle with Apple mobile devices not playing on the iPhone, the iPad, and Android embracing it fully. But this is not all Android devices.
No, it's not. But it will be also delivered to BlackBerry, Palm, WebOS, Windows Phone 7, Limo, Migo, and Symbian phone. So it's everybody but Apple.
Right.
Is going to be able to use Flash.
Is this enough to tip the scales?
You know what? I honestly don't think that many people will notice. Some folks have tested it out, have said it works fine, you know, with the Adobe provided demonstration websites. It's beautiful. With your average everyday website, most of the time it works okay. But, you know, what I don't think it will do is change anyone's life where they go, I've seen the light. I don't want an iPhone anymore because right. Flash is available on Android. What I do think it will do will hinder Steve Jobs' master plan to somehow make everyone use HTML5 and abandon Flash.
It'll just make life really tough for web developers who have to create portals for HTML5, portals for Flash.
Exactly. It's annoying because you'll be looking at it and saying, well, my Flash site is going to be available to these, you know, millions and millions of BlackBerry and Android users. So there's not huge pressure to get rid of it. But at the same time, if I want to get that segment that's pretty chunky of iPhone users, now I got to think about it.
Right.
Instead of just having one thing that everybody uses. It's not a standard. Flash is not a standard. Everybody says like one standard, but it's just the thing. and now Apple has thrown a wrench into that thing. But good news for the Nexus Oneers and the Evos and the folks who can get 2.2 Android, and it's coming to you BlackBerry and you Migo users out there.
Right.
Both of you. There's at least one or two. You know, Apple sells an iPad every 2 seconds.
It's incredible. They've sold 3 million of these devices in 80 days.
But they're starting to worry people because to get the new iPhone OS system, which isn't on the iPad yet. I was just using that as an example of how popular they are. They make you agree to a new terms of service in the new iOS 4. And in that new terms of service, it says that we are going to collect precise real-time geographic location and sometimes share it with products and services. For example, we may share geographic location with application providers when you opt into their location services.
The LA Times had a big article writing this up as a huge privacy kerfuffle, and I kind of read it and said, really? I don't get it, because they tell you that they're going to use your location data. You're using location-aware apps. You have bought into this, and you know that this is what's in phones now. Why do you think this is such a big deal for people who are privacy advocates?
Yeah, I thought Erica Ogg put it really well on CNET. She said, if you want to use, say, Foursquare, an application that allows you to check in at places, Apple's making sure you know that it'll be sharing your location with Foursquare for the app to do it. But what people noticed is the way this is written is maybe a little sloppy, maybe a little vague on purpose. And it says Apple will be collecting all of this information. And you can turn it off in your settings. And if that's true, you can go in the settings. You can turn off location-based services. You can turn them off individually by app. But it doesn't make it clear that that's not sending that location information to Apple anymore. You can make sure it's not sending it to the apps. But Apple, if you remember, runs iAds.
I was just going to say this makes perfect sense then, because even if you're not using a location-aware app, they're going to use iAds in other apps to serve you location-aware info.
And if you disagree with it, you essentially brick your iPhone, because it when you plug into iTunes, you have to accept it, or else you can't download any apps or use iTunes at all.
Right. Well, that's just the terms of service. If you don't accept the new terms of service, you can't download any more apps. Right.
So to play devil's advocate, I always go back to this thing of people saying, location-aware advertising is evil. And I say, well, have you ever seen a billboard? They know where you are. They know that you might be hungry because you're driving down the road. And they know that Mary's Spaghetti House is at the next exit. That doesn't make me feel like it's invasion of
But they don't
privacy.
Know who you are. And Apple says in their
they
terms,
they say they
right?
won't tie your identification.
You just have to trust them.
That's the bottom line.
Yeah. It's all a matter of trust. And the fact is, if they're not keeping any of this information about you, if it's just, you know, used anonymously to deliver targeted ads, it could be a very good thing, because you'll get ads in Urban Spoon for restaurants that, you know, give you coupons and stuff, right? It could all be beneficial, but it creeps some people out a lot to think, well, wait a minute. This now I'm carrying a thing with me that lets Apple and anybody else know exactly where I am all the time. And then they hear stories like the FBI has been using dragnet-style warrantless cell tracking to just, you know, track down anybody without even going to court. And I don't want the FBI tracking me all the time. I didn't do anything wrong.
Everyone is carrying a tracking device. It is pretty creepy.
Yeah, exactly.
The specific story you're talking about is about bank robbers in Connecticut, though. Is that correct?
Correct. The U.S. Justice Department was trying to track down bank robbers, but they didn't get warrants for it. What they did is they went and said, hey, tell us any calls made to or from these numbers.
And there was 180 different numbers. Yeah. It wasn't like two or three, so I understand that.
And that's why Declan McCullough is calling it a dragnet, because they wanted to use that to get a big bunch of data of who was around at that time that they can then use to narrow down and try to find the bank robbers.
And specifically, they weren't wiretapping or getting called. You know, they weren't recording voice conversations. They were trying to triangulate their location, and they were identifying, okay, let's see the calls made just prior to the bank robbery, see if they called any known associates. I'm trying to just represent the other side of the coin, as opposed to us just being, you know, freedom-loving lefties who are press-type people, media people. So I mean, I'm seeing.
Yeah, we can set this aside and say, let's say we all agree that the FBI wasn't trying to do anything nefarious here. They were just trying to find the bank robbers. And we all want them to find the bank robbers, right? And, you know, maybe Pretty Boy Floyd and a few other folks out there don't, but
they could effortlessly and without any kind of a warrant spy and record every location of 180 people, many of whom had nothing to do with the bank robberies.
But they needed to do it to find the bank robbers. Now, what the Obama administration says is Americans enjoy no reasonable expectation of privacy in their cell phones whereabouts. That they don't need a warrant because the Fourth Amendment is not violated here. You're walking around outside with your cell phone. That's you're carrying something that you know is trackable. You should have no expectation of privacy. ACLU and the EFF disagree and say that, you know, you should have to have a warrant to track the whereabouts of Americans. And that leads into this other story about the FTC saying current privacy laws aren't working.
They're broken. And this is the bottom line. I mean, we all have such a different expectation of privacy. We have such a different definition of it. And I think it's really interesting. This was at an event in Canada where there were, it was an FTC you have the FTC side. I had this comment from Microsoft. Tell me the front side, and I'll tell you the Microsoft
side. Yeah, Federal Trade Commission representative delivered a speech in Calgary and gave them a stern indictment of current privacy law, saying they failed to protect American consumers and instead placed too much of a burden on them, saying there's just too much confusion about what data is collected by whom in what way, because it's different with every single company you interact with, and you interact with so many different companies on the internet now.
And so the only blanket thing that you can do as a consumer is accept that privacy is dead, or, you know, rage against the machine, which is tough because we're just not set up for that. And the question is, what can the FTC, what can government officials do? There was an attorney for Microsoft, Mike Hintz, who was there, and he said that one thing he thinks is working is the data breach, the idea that you have to let people know
data breach notification
if their data has been let loose in some way that could be they could be used nefariously. And now this isn't nationwide; it's only in California. Is that right?
I don't know if it's in California. It's in Canada.
Well, that's what's interesting is so many of these countries are working across. So many of these companies are working across borders that if they have to set it up for one, then it should be ubiquitous everywhere because it's just too hard to identify the location of all your users. So in some senses, the most advanced privacy nations and states can pull us forward.
Yeah. FTC Chairman John Leibowitz said that what the agency is thinking of is, should they utilize more opt-in, make it required that you have to opt in to collecting your data rather than opt out of collecting your data. Treat special categories of information as sensitive, such as health, personal, financial. Treat them differently with different levels of protection. And different protections for vulnerable consumers, such as the elderly and children. So you can expect to have more privacy regulations proposed in the next couple of years.
It's the Wild West out there. Hold on.
Especially as we see all these Facebook stories and these Apple stories and all this data is collected. And it comes down, as we came down in the Apple story, to do you trust the company? And how do you verify that trust? How do you decide whether to trust them or not?
And here we are living this every day. For those who are listening, they're listening and trying to stay on top of this. But for Joe Sixpack, this is the least of his problems, completely unaware.
Right.
And all these
EULAs are like 10 times the length of the Constitution in some cases. And you're going to read every single EULA for every single website you ever visit every single day?
No, I upgraded all of my Apple software last night and click, click, yes, 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 whatever.
Irresponsible, Becky. So irresponsible.
But now I can multitask.
But then on the other side of the story, we have Elliot Van Buskirk over at Wired talking about a new advertising system that will let you spy on the advertiser.
Oh, sure. I buy that.
Advertising industry plans to start including a transparent mechanism this summer that can give you a hint as to why particular advertisements found you and provide controls to limit or even stop them.
Supposedly, you'll be able to click on a link in all of these ads and you'll find out why you were being served certain ads, what your profile indicates, and then opt out. It'll be self-policing. And I call total BS.
Really?
You don't think this is going to work out? No, this screams out the do not call list.
Yeah.
Like that really worked super.
Well, the big thing with the do not call list was that anyone could call you that did business with you.
Right. Or from Canada.
Well, that were all the people that were calling you in the first place. You know, the cable company, the telephone company.
The 50,000 people who got my mortgage information sold to them from
the
banks.
And then if you didn't happen to read the piece of junk mail that came from your credit card that said, hey, we're going to share all of your information with all these other people, then those became legitimate as well.
We could do a whole show on the do not call list. But yeah. I just think this is a bunch of hooey. You know, they said that they're looking for a compliance tool that will check all the elements of these principles and that they're going to really work to create a very progressive tech-based solution to policing themselves. And I just...
They're going to use the Google Profile Manager as their model. That's the one that allows you to view the profile advertisers have created about you on Google. Mm. And they're going to make it universal. And that's not a bad idea.
Hey, you know
Let's
what?
Just it's not a... overinterpret what this is actually going to do.
It's a step. They're hearing the message. Okay.
Yeah. All right, let's say take a quick break to thank our sponsor, Audible. Audible is the sponsor of Tech News Today today. Leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature. You like fiction? They got fiction. But you know what a lot of people don't realize? They have nonfiction, histories, and stuff like that. But you might guess that. They have periodicals. They have magazines. They have Cato Institute publications. There's all kinds of good stuff. You can get Scientific American in there. So you know what? Listeners of Tech News Today are going to get a secret benefit.
Ooh.
That no one else gets. Audible is offering you a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. It's kind of a voting procedure now. Audible's on so many podcasts, so we're asking you, please, when you go try out audible.com and get your free book, use our code.
That's right.
audiblepodcast.com/TNT.
Vote for us on American Idol.
We've got a book. If you want a book to try out, you know the Facebook movie's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
This fall, the movie poster just came out yesterday. So you might want to read the book before you go see the movie.
Right. Facebook effect, is that the one we're talking about?
The Facebook movie is based on The Accidental Billionaires, the founding of Facebook. So you can check it out, listen to it, or read it.
The Facebook effect is by David Kirkpatrick. That just came out, and I noticed it was also
It's
available.
Also available, so that you could do one or both.
Right. You need so much Facebook.
So check it out. Just go to audiblepodcast.com/TNT and download a free audiobook of your choice. Nintendo says the 3DS design is not 100% final, that they showed it off at E3 to get feedback.
Oh.
Or at least that's what industrygamers.com says, based on an interview with Nintendo of America boss Reggie Philem. How would you? I don't, it's French. Acknowledge that Nintendo was seeking feedback from attendees and may still tweak the design of the 3DS.
I called my contact at Nintendo, and he said, you know, basically, the hardware could change slightly. The innards probably gonna stay the same.
Okay,
the analogy he made is the plumbing's gonna stay the same, but the color of the curtains might change. And color was a specific word that he used.
Will the curtains match the drapes?
We will not be discussing that on this podcast, Tom.
So you might get different colors. You might get slight tweaks to the design, but it's gonna be staying the same.
And they told us the same thing about Kinect, which is they have basically till September. The 3DS is coming out in March of 2011. So the Kinect coming out in November of 2010, but they said they have till September to tweak and really alter the way this thing is going to finally look.
And March 31st, 2011, they backed that up, said you'll get your Nintendo 3DS no later than that
date.
That's what
they told me.
They might come earlier. We might still see it in time for the holidays, but right now they're saying that's the end of our fiscal year is what they're targeting.
So for all markets, they guaranteed by March.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So Japan might get it first, and then Europe, then the U.S. It could roll out. So we'll see. Skype is opening up an API, or I'm sorry, not an API, an SDK called SkypeKit to all devices and desktop apps. So basically anything that's got an internet connection could now run Skype.
We got a great email from someone who said, hey, when you guys throw those acronyms around, will you back out of those a little bit? So that's a developer's kit is what we're talking about.
Right.
That'll go out. Initially, it'll
software development kit.
Sent out to on an invitation basis to some developers, app makers, and hardware developers. It'll be available starting June 23rd, a.k.a. tomorrow, based on Linux. And
Mac and Windows will be following shortly thereafter.
Exactly. And I think this is interesting because at CES last year, there was a lot of hype about the integrated Skype in HDTVs, and they would have
right,
HD
this
cameras
idea that
you could
make a call sitting on your couch.
And right. And they thought that it would really change the interface if they took it off of the computer and put it into other devices. So it's going to be in your fridge.
Yeah, your toaster.
It's definitely going to be in the toaster.
No, but where would it be good? I mean, I could see it. I could see video games, especially wanting to say, "Hey, we're gonna have video chat in our game." You know, it's just Skype. We're gonna pop Skype
right.
in there.
So it'd be picture in picture. What about in a video camera? So
oh,
like
yeah.
a flip cam uh-huh. with Skype built into it, such that it, you know, if you had Wi-Fi.
So you're taking your Ooh. Video camera on vacation,
live broadcasting,
and then when you want to call back to you know check on the home front, you just turn the video camera
right.
on.
Right, yeah. and
or
you
live
can,
broadcasting.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. yeah. Now because it's the SDK now, so does that mean is it an open source standard? Like once you now that they've released this, is it free for anyone to implement?
It's not. It's right now. It's invitation only, and I think that they did make a good point. Initially available in beta on invitation. So once it's open, now the question is, if you're gonna put that into a commercial use, you probably have to get you have to license the Skype technology.
Maybe not. I mean, I think you probably have to license the Skype name, but I think it's in Skype's best interest to get there, as long as they're probably going to require you to include the ability to buy Skype out credits.
Right.
Because then it would make sense for them to say, no charge. Put it in your digital camera. Put it in your fridge. Put it in your video game. We just want to be able to make some money off of selling Skype in and Skype out credits.
So you would have to be able to log in.
Mm-hmm.
You would have to use your Skype account. And remember, we talked to Skype when FaceTime, Apple's new front-facing video camera and video calling was announced. And they were very polite and cagey in saying, we welcome the chance to work with Apple. And we, our APIs are available for them. So it's interesting. They are opening
up. And here it comes. Here comes the SDK to use their API. Finally, Read Write Web saying that CDs and radio still reign supreme in music. According to a survey that gathered responses on PollDaddy, this is a survey from mobile entertainment company Mixer, 74% of respondents still buy CDs, and 40% of users said that regular old radio was the most popular way for them to discover new music. iTunes was only 15% of the users, TV 12%, Facebook and Twitter 11%, then down to MySpace, Pandora, and live concerts.
I'm interested in this because I do think that as a passive user, when you're in a car and you don't have any other media with you, you do kind of bop around and try and find new songs, and I keep Shazam on my phone so that I can tag any songs that I think, oh, that's a good one. And I'm always looking for new music. And sometimes just bopping through the top 100 on iTunes, it isn't the same. You don't have, in that 7 or 12 seconds of preview, you don't have the same amount of time to really have a relationship with the song. I know that sounds crazy, but that's what the radio is all about.
I will discover new music occasionally from blog posts where somebody's like, hey, check out this the Wu-Tang Clan Beatles mix album, for instance.
Of course.
Which is fantastic. I found out about on Boing Boing. But then, just your general like songs on the radio is where I find a lot of other stuff, or from my wife.
Yeah, well, I mean, musical taste.
Yeah, exactly.
Exceeds yours.
So. Absolutely.
I was also interested that this was from a survey at PollDaddy, because to me that sounded like a place where you would learn to pole dance, but I've just gone to the site, and it's a way to set up online surveys in minutes. So just in case you were wondering.
They may expand into that later, but that's not what they do.
Not today.
And 1,049 users. I don't know if they were statistically accurately selected or not. They may have been, but just a little. When you're doing an internet survey on the internet, you wouldn't expect that many people to have these old
analog
media
proclivities
ways. And I think what happens is we have been definitely changing how people discover and buy music, and so all the stories have been about that. And about the collapse of the music industry. But the fact of the matter is, what that means is a larger percentage of people are doing it. That doesn't mean the largest percentage of people are doing it.
It might
be a subtle
growing
distinction
fastest.
There. Yeah, exactly.
Is the same sample of people that answered that they get most of their music or learn about it from radio, are they the same people that said that they get 42% of their music acquisition from iTunes?
Yes, same study.
Interesting.
And then that's... by store. So think about it, like iTunes is the most popular store. Even though 74% of them said they still buy CDs, they buy those at Walmart, Best Buy, maybe over Amazon or other locations.
Right.
Other was number two, 23%. And then Friends was the third most popular place at 18%.
Mm-hmm.
So I think some of these Friends may be unknown peer-to-peer connections.
Right. My friend LimeWire. My friend Kazaa.
Yeah. My friend El Imevire. Yeah, so I thought it was a good kind of check on our over-enthusiasm inside the internet beltway perspective.
Right. Well, I think there's also something to be said that you have an emotional connection with live. So, we know from our live audience who watches our show live or who watches Twit live, you feel a collectivism when you listen to something with a group of people. And whether you're chatting with them or you just know that the guy in the car next to you might be listening to it too, I always feel like it's a little bit more exciting to listen to the radio than to listen to my own music. I don't know why.
Until the commercials hit and then you get annoyed.
Point.
Now, you've been trying out a bunch of internet services right. to organize your life.
Yeah, I have a story on Good Morning America tomorrow that I think might interest some of our listeners, because have you ever had a birthday coming up for your wife or a baby gift that you needed to get somebody?
Now.
And you don't know what to get her, and you don't have time to go shopping or even online. Like, even if you know what you want to do, you have to fill out the form. Well, there's a whole new category of online services that are personal assistants virtually.
Right. So instead of spending a ton of money hiring somebody and interviewing them, you just use the service.
It's companies called Ask Sunday, iHabilis.com, Red Butler. And for roughly $2 a task, you can have them do anything from, I had them research preschools in my area. I had them buy a baby gift for Lindsay Arendt,
ex-coworker. Oh, congratulations, Lindsay.
Yeah. But I won't say what I got her, because I don't want anybody, of course, to ruin the surprise. But I gave them my credit card. I gave the service my credit card.
Uh-huh. So you had to trust them.
You have to trust them. And I told them the address, and I sent them a link of what I wanted. They can also suggest ideas for you. And boom, I got an email that said, here's your receipt.
Excellent.
There are things that they excel
at. And the gift, right?
Let's hope so. I'll have to find out if it makes it there. There are things that they excelled at, and then there are things that they did a mediocre job at. I asked them to help me rent a minivan for a trip we're going on, and they sent me a PDF with 5 of the options. But when I went online and searched for a discount code, I found something, and I got, you know, an option for $180, $150 cheaper. So for some tasks, they excel, and you really need to get to know what they're good at. But I just think it's an interesting evolution of internet services.
Well, it's the thing that Timothy Ferris is a big proponent of to get to that 4-hour, 5-hour work week.
Outsource.
Is that you just outsource all this stuff to these personal assistants, and they you just tell them what to do.
Yeah.
I always think it's going to take us long for me to explain all of the crazy exceptions that I have to actually doing something as it would for them to me to just do it myself.
But there are some tasks, like this morning, I realized, I promised somebody I would make a donation to their charity. I sent the link. They already had my credit card. I said, give this much money. Boom. Within an hour, I had a receipt.
Yeah. I guess that once you get in the habit of knowing they've got enough information about you, you've got the email memorized, it's in your address book.
Right.
You know, it starts to make sense. All right, let's move on to the calendar. Of course, this week is iPhone week, so the calendar is dominated by Thursday. But there's other stuff going on, right?
Like Wednesday, Droid X becoming available from Verizon. And there was a question in the chat room. No, it will not have a front-facing camera, but it will have an 8-megapixel camera, records 720p video. So Droid X, for all you Verizon users, big screen, big Android phone. I think it will cause some excitement.
Yes.
Google Voice.
Today.
Is now available to everyone. In the past, you had to have...
In the United States.
In the United States. Thank you for the clarification. Up until now, you had to have an invitation from a current user, but now available to everyone in the U.S. And the benefits here, you get a single phone number that directs calls to any of the phones that you're at, whether you're at home or you want to use your cell phone or work. You can get a transcribed email or text message of voicemails. We use that here at the show.
Yeah, 260-TNT-SHOW is the number, and it goes to a Google Voice box.
And the transcriptions are absolutely crazy.
They're ridiculous. They don't make any sense at all.
But they're fun. It's kind of an interesting
word. In fact, let's play our voicemail today from Bill in Louisiana. Before we do, here's what the transcription says. Hey, it's Monday PM Thoroughness Bowen from the weekend. So... let's hear what he actually said.
Hey, Tom and Becky and Sarah. This is Bill in from Louisiana. You guys were talking about E3 and the Kinect thing the other day, and I just had a eureka moment. We're pretty close to getting the Minority Report interface. With Kinect being able to track your movement, all they have to do is come up with some 3D thing that can sort of pop out from the screen, and you can kind of reach out and control stuff, like Minority Report. Pay me, Microsoft. All right, love the show, guys. Bye.
And the Kinect showing up in more stores. We mentioned last week during E3 that GameStop had been showing it available for pre-order briefly for $150. And so it seems like that's actually going to be the price, because it's showing up at the Microsoft store and a few other places now at $150.
And Eric asked the interesting question. You thought that an important point was... cost, right?
Yes, I have a feeling that Microsoft is losing a lot of money on this, because it seems like such advanced hardware, and we know historically they've been willing to lose a lot of money on the Xbox hardware.
The rumors are that it cost $150 to make the Kinect, So I think that's
selling it right at cost then.
Yeah, because they want to make the money back on the games. Mm-hmm. And that's the standard model for consoles, so I guess it could be the standard model for all accessories going forward as well.
And Minority Report was a phrase that was thrown around a lot when this first demoed. And a huge question I've seen in lots of different places is how much latency with the interface. And I got to tell you, it was very, very quick. I didn't feel the latency issue at all. They had a zipper that you unzip to start the game. So basically they want you to move your hand across the camera face and boom, it felt like you were holding the thing.
Just needs to pop out. Need to get a little bit of 3D technology.
Hologram action. Yeah.
They say the Xbox is capable of 3D. They were talking about that today. So not far off from the Minority Report thing. On to the emails to TNT@twit.tv. Aldo says, I ordered two phones on the 15th family package. Checked the order status yesterday, and it says there's no order. I obviously get on the phone really quickly and call AT&T. They say everything's fine. Okay, this morning I checked the order status, and it says I ordered the phone on the 21st, yesterday. So I start to well up. Kind of kidding. Because this means I won't get the phones until next fracking month, right? So I call again. I was on hold for a total of about an hour, even after they called me back. While I'm holding, I'm chatting with my wife, and I tell her all this. And during the call, she says, Aldo, this is so weird. I have a package here from AT&T. I get all excited, right? She sends me a pic from iChat, and she's got this weird look on her face, and she's holding up a Samsung smartphone. WTF! No battery, no backing, just the phone. Turns out it's the Samsung impression. So I tell the lady from AT&T this after giving her the order number, and she says that it's a replacement phone and to call a certain other number. Seems like AT&T is more screwed up than we thought. By the way, she told me I'll get my iPhone sometime between the 24th and the 28th.
Your dramatic reading was so powerful.
Did you feel Aldo's frustration?
What the frack?
It's just the weirdest thing about that is the Samsung impression showing up. I don't know, Aldo, did you have a Samsung before and ordered a replacement? Like, how did that happen?
This is just also one of those indications of AT&T having bad PR week. So anything like anomalous or wonky just gets lumped right on top. Yeah. We don't know if it's a furtherance of the issues or just some...
Or just some random occurrence. Yeah, who knows?
We got an email from Jerry who says, hi, love the show. You have excellent taste in podcasts, obviously. That's me saying that to him. But then he goes on to make a point. Concerning the Wi-Fi capture of data by Google, I've noticed that no one's pointing out the fact that Google volunteered the information about the capture. And by that, I mean they didn't have to. They didn't have to have it exposed by a third party checking up on them covertly. And then he goes on to say, I also agree with your point about governments and data. They should never meet.
Mm. Now, you were pointing out when we read this email in prep that while no one covertly discovered this, Google wouldn't have made it public had it not been for Germany, right?
The German government was doing an audit of Google's practices around Street View data collection, and they asked for a complete list of the data collected during the drive-bys.
Right, because everybody's paranoid about taking pictures of your house and all that, right?
Right. And then Google did their own audit to comply with the request, and that's when the realization of the Wi-Fi slurp occurred.
Right. So I mean, Google didn't hide it. You know, I guess if they were really up to something nefarious, they could have tried to hide that data.
It's interesting. They were very forthcoming about it. They immediately said it was an accident, a mistake. We didn't mean to do it. We're not parsing the payload data. And this is almost a PR story because you have companies that hide from these things and say nothing went wrong. And then you have companies like Google coming forth and saying, we did it. We're sorry. We screwed up. In both cases, this story still lives. Even though Google says they screwed up, it's still happening.
And I definitely encourage people to go and read that story that we talked about yesterday about why you capture Wi-Fi hotspots this way to understand what it is most likely that Google did here. Because it definitely takes the edge off of it, and it seems a lot less malicious than it might otherwise.
The simple definition of what you're talking about is that they use the initial 24 bits of the, the payload data to try and map the relay points from which other SSID, other Wi-Fi signals are being sent. But I disagree with that, and I wasn't on the show to disagree with you yesterday because in an independent analysis of what Google did with the data, they say they never once took the payload data and parsed it, that it never went into memory. It always just lived resident in hard drive of all the data that was being collected on the incoming slurp, if you will. Mm-hmm. So they took all the data, including the payload data, and then they only parsed out the SSID and the MAC address. They didn't take anything from the payload.
Well, and that's consistent with what they're saying, which was this this software was created in-house to triangulate stuff, mm-hmm. and we didn't realize it was taking in this other payload data. So they probably weren't trying to do all of the things in that story that you could do.
Right.
But the story explains why it might be there in the first place.
I understand. Yeah.
Errata Security. Oh, thanks, Eric. The Errata Security at erratasec.blogspot.com if you want to take a look at that. All right. We got one last email from Seamus at who works on Gizmodo in Australia. And he wanted to point out that when we talked about Telstra selling their network to the Australian government yesterday, Telstra used to be owned entirely by the government. It's still owned mostly by the government. And they're actually not selling the copper wires. They're only selling access to the infrastructure, to the trenches, the pits, and the outlets, and the ducts, and all that. And then they're going to decommission the copper and the cable network. So just a clarification of how that's working. It doesn't really change the upshot of it, which is Telstra gets out of the business, and NBN, which is the company they'll eventually spin out of the government, will run the fiber network for the country.
But what does that mean for Telstra Stadium, where I watch the Australian rugby team play?
They got $11 billion. They can still sponsor Telstra Stadium. I've been to Telstra Stadium.
Okay. I'm just making sure.
They're not going to get rid of that anytime soon. Maybe they can move it closer to Sydney now.
Right.
That would be convenient. All right. Thanks, everybody, for watching the show today. You can find us at twit.tv/TNT. Email us. Our email address is tnt@twit.tv. And give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll see you tomorrow.
Bye.